It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Finds the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes, Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure, Brady's chased, Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, a jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Medem.
And a good Tuesday morning to you all out there in Big Blue Nation. So glad you could join us here on Giants.com this morning with you for the next 60 minutes alongside John Schmelk. I'm Lance Medem. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. You could also chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, pound Giants Chat. And we're going to get right to the phone calls because our big topic of discussion today is what you think about the Super Bowl coming to New Jersey next season.
Are you
we're
excited?
About a year removed.
Are you pumped up?
Mixed
are you looking
feelings,
forward to it?
Definitely looking forward to it, having it here in our own backyard. But
by the way, you're not going to get credential, by the way. Just,
well, I, that's already
just so
been
you
made
know.
Clear. You've made that very clear over the last couple of days. Going to have to work my other connections outside the Giants organization, apparently.
Or maybe, you know, maybe you can get Schmelk a nice little gift or something.
Oh, really? Oh, so the bribing's got to start now. I got to get ahead of the game, apparently.
I am more than willing to accept bribes. There
All
is
right,
no
well,
question
we'll
about it.
We'll maybe put a gift basket of something together.
I don't even know if I have a credential, to be honest
well,
with you.
Well, there,
so
you,
there
go.
You go.
See, look who's jumping ahead of the game here.
But feel free to get me gifts anyway.
I'll consider it.
Yes.
I don't know. You haven't made too strong of a case.
No, I have not, really.
Apparently.
But you know what? It should be fun. But obviously there are things to worry about, whether it's the weather. I think it'll be interesting having all the events for the game spread out through New Jersey and New York City. I think that'll be interesting. I think New York will handle the traffic well enough just because that's what New York does. It's traffic. There's a billion roadways everywhere. Public
it's not
transportation
the first major event here.
Is so strong. They do a good job with the shuttle buses, things like that. So I don't think that'll be an issue. But I think, you know, weather, which is something you just can't control. You'll see what happens. You hope during the week there's not some kind of crazy big blizzard. If next week is like this week, or even the week before when it was really cold, but at least there's no really precipitation, I think everyone will be fine. It'll go off well. But, you know, sometimes Mother Nature doesn't cooperate. The league knew that when they went ahead and did the game here. And you cross your fingers, hope it works out. And it should be fun.
But 2 years ago when the Steelers played the Packers, you know, everybody was excited about the Super Bowl being in Dallas, and who would have thought that there would have been a snowstorm out there? It's unpredictable. I mean, we could have 60-degree weather here next year at this time.
And that's the difference. Dallas wasn't ready, and just as a city, isn't prepared for snow. It's the same thing like Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. gets 6 to 8 inches of snow, the whole city shuts down. It basically was like it's like Hurricane Sandy was up here, where, you know, everything just shuts down because you're just not used to dealing with snow. Dallas basically had 2 inches. And they shut the whole city down. In New York, obviously, you're much more prepared for these sort of things. And they'll deal with the weather if it comes. It'll just make it very inconvenient. But considering New York's history and its ability to handle big events, I think it'll be fine.
And for those of you who may not be familiar with the logistics surrounding MetLife Stadium, there are a handful of salt houses, and I'm telling you that John Schmelk is working very hard filling up those salt houses the last couple of weeks to make sure that in the event there is a snowstorm a year from now, he will be shoveling it out himself to make sure that parking lot is ready and functioning.
I could tell you what, if you would have looked at my car on Saturday after that snowstorm last Friday, driving home, you would have thought I drove through all those salt houses. My car, which is a black Honda Civic, basically looked like a Dalmatian. There was so much salt on it.
There
it
were
was
white
disgusting.
Spots everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. It's the well, opposite.
That's what I'm saying. You've been putting your work in now to get prepared. We've been simulating real-life situations for you.
So
been getting good feedback, by the way. You should be happy.
So that mean you're gonna be, does that mean you're going to be driving around in the snowplow?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. And that's why I'm getting my training wheels taken off this week, because I've grown up, too.
Yeah. You driving
to put
a
plow the big boy pants on
does not
no,
make me comfortable at all.
It makes everybody worried, and I suggest everybody should get out of the way very quickly, sooner than later.
Now, what happens if you don't lift the plow when you get to one of those lift plow
well,
signs?
I would say there's going to be a lot of sparks and a lot of marks. That's what I would assume. Just going out on a limb.
201-939-4513.
All right, we start with our good friend Charles in North Carolina. Charles, what's happening? Welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. I got a different take on it. We get an inch down here in North Carolina, man. It shuts down.
Right.
So, yeah. I wouldn't know what you guys go through. I'm born and raised here in Charlotte, so I wouldn't know. But I'm just thinking I got a different take on it, I guess, because I'm not from the area where the Giants play. I am a Giants fan. I just feel like I'm just interested to see, again, I think the most important factor is going to be the weather. I'm just interested to see how it's going to play a role because this time of year, usually New York, snow, the conditions are not favorable for most teams that, in the league. I mean, you got a few teams that play up north in the Midwest and stuff, but, even the teams that's in the Super Bowl, the 49ers, they're not necessarily used to playing in a snowy condition. Atlanta's not. I mean, you just got a lot of teams that's just not used to playing in that type of weather. And even cold weather, that, for that matter, it doesn't get that cold down here like that, on the regular. So, I don't know. I like to see obviously I like to see the Giants play at home. But I'm interested to see how it's gonna play out, man. When we got announced that the Super Bowl was gonna be in New York, I was just like, wow. I'm thinking it's gonna be snowing that day. I just really feel like it's gonna be some snowy type stuff going on. That's exciting, man. That gives it just changed the dynamic of the whole game when you have the elements.
Charles, and what I'll say, too, is that if this game goes well, and I think everyone around the country should root for the game to go well and for there not to be any problems, because if it works well here in New York, who's to say Charlotte, which is a warmer weather climate than New York? Obviously, it does get cold there in the month of February, but you guys are going to get all those renovations done on your stadium. I believe the city of Charlotte approved that a couple of weeks ago. If you guys get brand-new amenities in that stadium – and this Super Bowl works out well in New York, Charlotte could be a place. It's a growing city. It's a nice little downtown. I could see them maybe getting a Super Bowl down the road as well.
Yeah, we had the back when we had the Charlotte Hornets, we had the All-Star game, NBA All-Star game years ago. And it went off without a hitch. It wasn't bad at all. I was in I'm 36 now. I think I was in school. I think I was in middle school when it came here. And I can just remember as a kid just going down to the arena at the time and seeing all the All-Stars and everything. And as far as I remember, it went off without a hitch, and that was a pretty big deal. That's when the NBA really was it's coming back now, but it's when it was pound for pound right with the NFL, back when Jordan and all those guys was around. And
Muggsy Bogues and Larry Johnson, you had some good guys down there.
Kendall Reed. Kendall Gill. Kendall Gill. J.R. Reed.
Percy Hawkins was down there.
Yeah, we had Zoe. Alonzo was here.
L.J.
So, yeah, we had a team. Yeah, L.J. We had a good team at one point, man. I can't say anything about the Bobcats.
Del Curry.
Yes. Kenny Gattison,
yeah,
too.
Del Curry. Hey, man, you know.
Oh, we know our Hornets basketball.
Yeah,
we
no
could
question.
Spend the next 60 minutes breaking down the 1992-93 Hornets. More power to you. Chime in on that.
I would like to see the Super Bowl come to Charlotte. That'd be nice, man. I mean, like I said, I'm not a Panther fan, which I get a lot of flack for because I was born here in Charlotte. I still live here, but I've always been I became a Lawrence Taylor fan back when I was a kid, and obviously we didn't have a team back then.
Right.
And I just gravitated towards the rest of the team, and I've been a fan since like mid '80s, man. And I get a lot of flack, but I would love to see that Super Bowl moved around to, Charlotte and some different areas, man, just, Chicago. That'll change the elements, that'll change the game, that'll change the, give advantages to some teams. But I like that. I like the challenge of, a team that's not really used to playing in snow or rain or freezing rain or whatever, and all of a sudden have to do that. That'll just make the game more exciting. It'll keep the game from being, too predictable. You won't know what's going to happen in those type situations, and I'm looking forward to seeing it, you know, maybe move around like that and just get some different venues. And other than, you know, Tampa, Dallas, New Orleans, you know, it'd be nice to just see it moved around and some different venues.
All right, Charles. Appreciate the call, man.
Thanks so much for weighing in this morning here on Big Blue Kickoff. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. And I think Charles does bring up a good point, because since the games have been in domes or warm weather climates the last few years, you know, it's really up for grabs which team has the advantage. Now, all of a sudden, if you have a cold weather team going up against a warm weather team, for example, the Ravens and the Niners this season, if this game was being played in cold weather conditions, you know, Baltimore has the edge. They're used to playing in that climate at least half of their games, whereas the Niners are playing their home games in nice, sunny, warm climate.
San Francisco can get chilly.
True, but you're not seeing snow. Let's put it that way.
No, usually
you're
not
seeing very tough conditions that you have to brace for each and every week.
Well, here's the funny thing. Charles seems to want inclement weather. A lot of people say, you know, let's hope it's good weather and it's a good game. Charles seems to want to have it a little X factor in the mix there and, you know, trying to see how people can survive in the snow.
Well, listen, the truth is, if the winds are picking up, you know, we talk about how the Giants are built to play in cold weather, for example. But if the winds are picking up, let's say, at MetLife Stadium, you know, Eli Manning's not necessarily going to be in favorable conditions to throw the ball 40 to 45 times.
Right.
So it doesn't even necessarily favor the cold weather team if the conditions are that bad and it's snowy and wet. It could hurt your running game, whether you're built for cold weather or you're built for warm weather. But I understand Charles' point. It adds a new element, a new wrinkle into the game. And then, you know, it adds to the unpredictability of the game, which is always necessarily a positive.
201-939-4513.
Let's go to Anthony in Syracuse. Anthony, what's happening?
How you doing, man? My opinion is the weather shouldn't really matter, because at least every player in the NFL done played in bad weather at least once, whether that be his college career or his pro career.
Yeah, you would think.
So people keep saying the cold weather and Met Stadium. No, that should make a difference. If you're a football player, you played in all conditions. So it doesn't really matter when the weather. I mean, it does come down to the cold and the grip of the ball and things like that, but that all depends on the quarterback. I have no idea what that has to do with the rest of the team. Like, the cold weather should not be a difference. And I've been a Giants fan my whole life. I'm 27. I cannot wait until it comes to New Jersey next season so I can go to the Super Bowl.
Nice. Well, Anthony, you know what? I don't think it's necessarily the cold people are worried about. I think people are worried more about wind, which it can get bad here at the Meadowlands, or precipitation, which might hurt some of the quality of the play, especially if, let's say, next year you have Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay Packers going up against, you know, Brett Favre and the Patriots, two big quarterbacks that you want to see them fling the ball all over the field. And if it's, you know, 40 mile an hour per hour winds and it's raining and it's cold, you know, their ability to throw the ball might be limited a little bit.
Did Brett Favre come out of retirement? Because I wasn't aware. Did you get that memo? Because I didn't get that memo.
I
said Favre.
You said Brett Favre and the Patriots.
I didn't realize he came out of retirement.
I really said Brett Favre?
Aaron Rodgers. I'm sorry.
I was like, wow, this is great.
But that has to do with the coach. That did not come down to the coaching staff to change their game plan. If you know it's going to be too windy to sling the ball 40, 50 times, then that's up to you to have a running game or some other kind of game that's going to help you. Like, the weather does make a difference, but the fact that they're saying cold weather teams and warm weather teams, it's no such thing as a cold weather team and a warm weather team, because every player on every team has played in cold weather dozens of times.
No, I hear you, but people pay to go see Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, or, you know, Brett Favre, Dorsey Levens, or Edgar Bennett, if you want to go back to the late 90s Packers. But, you know, I don't think people are going to get all excited to see James Starks run the ball against Shane Vereen for 60 minutes either.
Or
you know
people
I mean?
Are not going to be very excited about a 9-6 game because both offenses stall and they can't get in the end zone.
And you know, Anthony, football purists like me, you, and Lance here, we'll enjoy a game like that. It's a close game. It's defensive-oriented.
Absolutely.
We can appreciate that. But it's all those casual fans that pop in just for the Super Bowl and then want to go away afterwards that want to see all the points. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And those are the fans that's complaining about the weather games. Like,
right.
They're not any to me, personally, I believe the best football is played in cold weather. Turkey Bowl on Thanksgiving. I need rain. I need snow. I need some type of cold weather to play. That's how I feel personally. I don't know how anybody else feels, but I like playing football in cold weather. Like, it's funner to me in cold weather, the harsh weather, because then the terrain and the weather has an effect on everything. Okay, it's cold. You're not going to throw the ball. If I know you can't throw the ball because the wind is 20, 30 miles an hour, okay, that lets me know what kind of game I'm going to play. Like, I enjoy cold weather. I can't speak for everybody else, but I absolutely enjoy watching football in cold weather, and I like playing football in cold weather.
Well, you better, Anthony. You live in Syracuse, because if you're in Syracuse and you don't like cold weather, let me tell you, you're probably living in the wrong place.
Exactly. You know, Syracuse got the stupidest weather in the world. I
All right, Anthony. Appreciate
Anthony,
the call, man.
Thanks so much. If the Super Bowl ever goes to Syracuse, I'll tell you, that is one city that knows how to deal with its snow.
Well, yeah, they have all the underground tunnels on campus. And, you know, the Carrier Dome is actually probably almost big enough to host a Super Bowl. That thing holds 70,000 plus, right?
Yeah, but then the weather won't have any impact on the game.
Oh, I know.
It's indoors.
Well, where do you want to play it in Syracuse? At the public park?
Yes, the public park.
By the way,
ideal.
We knocked off probably about 65-70% of that 92-93 Charlotte Hornet team.
I'm going to throw out another one. I had one guy
David
that I was
Wingate,
holding back.
We screwed up. We should have gotten him.
How about Tony Bennett, backup point guard to Muggsy Bogues?
You remembered him?
Oh, I do remember
him. He was a rookie that
there
season.
We go,
that is
you
an
see?
Excellent job
yes.
out of you.
I got to dig deep here to see if I can get. There's somebody who backed up Alonzo Mourning, I feel, that we may have missed.
Johnny Newman was
Johnny
on that
Newman,
team.
Johnny Newman, that's right.
He, I
okay.
forgot he had gotten
Shooting
there
guard,
at that
yeah.
point. Rookie that year, the great Lorenzo Williams. 6'9 center out of Stetson University. Kevin Lynch out of Minnesota
Didn't
was a backup shooting guard.
Did they have Joe Wolf on that team or something?
He's
or
not.
He played later.
Close.
Okay.
Mike Jaminski.
Mike Jaminski, who went on to be a color commentator for the Bucks, I believe.
Correct. 6'11
right.
center out of Duke. That was in his 12th year. Everyone else was actually pretty. Sidney Green was a backup
okay.
power forward on that team.
Former Sixer.
Tom Hammonds was a backup power forward as well. You pulled. I was very impressed by you pulling Kenny Gattison.
Yes. Well, you know,
I was
told
very
you.
Impressed by that.
Those NBA hoops cards back in the day, we studied up.
Playing Lakers versus
yes.
versus Celtics on your Sega Genesis.
Oh boy, boy, we altered the rosters back in the
yeah.
day.
201.
We even created some guys who were in the game.
201-939-4513. You could also go on Twitter.
Hold on, before we go
the
back to life,
Giants
Mike
chat.
Farmer, excellent contributor here. Scott Burrell, I forgot.
Scott Burrell did not
was
make
not
it
on
yet.
That team
no.
yet. Okay.
I
that was a good
Scott
one.
Burrell
yeah.
was a rookie.
A little bit later
either
on.
Either the following year or the year after that. Let me take a look
but that's
here.
A, that's a good name
Scott
drop
Burrell
there.
Was a rookie in 93-94.
He came in the following year.
Excellent.
Okay.
That's when Hersey yeah. Hawkins joined the team
See?
As well.
Well, that was in a trade from the Sixers, I believe.
Wow.
Hersey Hawkins. Yes.
Romeo Robinson also joined the team in 93-94. How about that? There you go.
Yeah, the Hornets had some players.
Frank Borkowski making an appearance as well that following
Frank
year.
Frank
Borkowski. Remember Frank Borkowski?
He was with the Sonics team that
he
lost
was
to the Bulls.
Not a good basketball player.
No. He did the dirty things that, you know, weren't necessarily within the rules.
Chippy player.
Yes.
That
oh
Frank
boy.
Borkowski.
That's why him and Rodman went at it in that NBA
oh, yeah,
finals.
Remember that?
201. That was some matchup.
939-4513. Our good buddy Hassan's in East Orange. Hassan, good morning.
Morning.
What's up, pal?
I see over here you're talking about the weather. Oh, I want to talk about the Giants.
Go ahead.
All right, what you got?
What's up? What are we going to do next year with the defensive scheme?
The scheme overall you're talking about? Well, I mean, they're not going to get rid of the defensive coordinator, I'll tell you that. So I don't know how drastically the scheme will change. I mean, I think they'll tweak some of the personnel. They'll look to improve in the draft. They may lose, for example, OCU Manure in free agency, so Matthias Kiwanuka will probably be an every-down player on the line. Past that, I wouldn't expect huge changes where they're going to completely overhaul the defense.
And I have some novel ideas for the defense, actually.
Because, you know, Perry Field, he can play 3-4 or either 4-3.
Well, but you have to have the personnel in place to do
yeah,
that, too.
Yeah, and frankly, I don't think that – I mean, look, Hassan, the Giants' issue this year was linebackers. And they couldn't – they had trouble finding one really good linebacker to put on the field. The last thing you want to do is try to put four out there instead of three. You know what I mean?
Hey, but we can have JPP stand up as an outside linebacker. Madias Kiwanuka is the outside linebacker.
But then you sacrifice the guys on the line, and they need to get that pass rush back.
You can keep Tuck down the ground because Tuck he can play anywhere on the line.
But is Tuck alone going to be that effective as your sole pass rusher?
You can theoretically put Tuck and Canty at end.
You could have Linval in the middle.
Yeah, you could, but
Canty and Tuck, and I think. I like Keith Rivers. He showed me something last year. I think
he's never healthy.
Yeah, Yeah, you're right, though.
You know what, though? And the thing, you know, look, could if the Giants wanted to, could they figure out a way to go from the 4-3 to 3-4? Sure. But look, the strength of JPP is having his hand on the ground and rushing the quarterback. I think you're making him a less effective player by trying to force him into a 3-4 linebacker. You know what I mean?
I think he got the advantage because he's not a weak player. He's a strong guy.
Man. That's why he's good on the line. Well, Hassan, you know what? I have a novel concept for how the Giants improve on defense, and here's it. I think JPP needs to get more than 6.5 sacks. I think Justin Tuck needs to get more than 3. I think Corey Webster needs to have a bounce-back season. And I think their defensive backfield can't suffer about 4 season-ending injuries in the first 2 months of the year. I think if those things happen, I think the Giants' defense will be a lot better. And I think it has a lot more to do with execution than it has to do with scheme. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, Hassan. Appreciate the call, man. Thanks a lot.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You could also chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, pound Giants Chat.
I'm still impressed by Mike Farmer dropping the Scott Burrell.
Yeah, I like that. I was a big fan of that reference. And Scott Burrell just did not make the cut. He came the following year.
And we're talking 90s Hornets basketball.
Yeah, if you want to weigh in on that, too. I mean, if you want to reminisce about Tony Bennett, and I'm not talking about the singer. I'm talking about the backup Hornets point guard.
Oh, how about this? Who was the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets in between 1992 and 1994? Same coach, 2 straight years.
Wow.
I would not have gotten this. So it's hard. It's not easy.
It wasn't Kevin Laughlin, right?
It was not.
He went to Miami.
Correct. Wow, that's a good pull anyway.
I thought he may have had a stop briefly with the Hornets. Wow, I am drawing blanks here. The Hornets head coach.
It's not easy.
Not a former player, was it?
I don't think so.
You probably don't even recognize the name.
I recognize the name. I'm not sure if he was a former player, though. All I have is coaching record here.
Well, don't give
play.
It out. Maybe we'll throw some hints out throughout the course of the show. We'll reveal at the end because I don't want to know. I want to see if I can maybe
figure
get
it out.
All
right. Yeah.
201-939-4513.
Our buddy Vic is in Connecticut. What's up, Vic?
Good morning, guys.
How are you, Vic?
I'm good. Hey, listen, just a couple things before. Just a couple comments on the game. I think we started off our off season on a tremendous note for Giants fans. Paul was on yesterday.
Yes.
Which was very nice to hear. Number two, we had a really terrific showing in the Pro Bowl with JPP and Cruz and even Eli. The only thing I didn't like was that first pick that Eli threw. He had that face that he kind of had during the season, which kind of scared me, but he really picked it up. So, I mean, there's hope that we could be in the Super Bowl in Giants Stadium next year based on their performance starting off their offseason. I think when you look at the game in New York, I think you have to look at the game and you have to look, you know, from the game perspective and then from the fans. And you know, obviously, there were some great games played in bad weather, like the Ice Bowl, you know, years ago. And there was plenty of Patriot playoff games that turned out really exciting. And the Bills played many of them up in Buffalo.
Oh, yeah, the Tuck game rule for one when Oakland played New England.
Well, which started them off on a couple Super Bowls in a row there. And the Bills were year after year after year. So, I mean, there were some good games played. And with the field turf involved in the stadiums now, I think you guys mentioned a few days ago, you know, it's so much easier to manage. It's not going to be a muddy mess. It might be a little bit icy or slick.
That's a great point.
It really improves the game. And I think the Giants played a terrific game with Green Bay and, you know, the Brett Favre game when Coughlin almost lost some of his skin because of the cold. But it still was a good football game. It wasn't riddled with mistakes. The part that bothers me is the game doesn't bother me. So I think teams will adapt to whatever they have to. But the part that bothers me just a little bit is the fans' perspective. Because I think a lot of times fans, and I was watching ESPN last night, watching people sitting around, you know, in the French Quarter having a cocktail, and it's, you know, pretty nice. And it looks like a lot of people do go to Super Bowls for vacation. So I'm wondering to see if the experience from a fan's perspective is going to be a big draw and people are just going to come because they like the Super Bowl experience. And don't get me wrong, New York has lots to offer. Just a little colder than New Orleans, but lots to offer. And I think in the end, I think it'll either be viewed, you know, when it all boils down, you know, a week later, I think the commissioner and the people will sit down and say it was either a tremendous success or a little bit less than they wanted, maybe even a C or a C-minus, if you will. I don't think there'll be any in-between ground. It's either going to be, hey, it was a success, or, you know, the cold weather experience didn't work. And I guess from a broadcast standpoint, you know, we're looking for the Giants and the Jets, right?
Yeah, I suppose. But, hey, Vic, remember this, too. The NFL has had games in cold weather cities, just the game had been the dome. They've had Super Bowls in Detroit. They've had Super Bowls in Minnesota. They've had Super Bowls in Indianapolis. So fans have gone to these games. We were lucky last year. Indy's weather was actually very nice, but it can get darn cold there in the winter.
And it can impact travel, too, around the city.
Exactly. And the NFL has dealt with that in terms of fans going to cold weather cities. And I'm willing to bet that fans will enjoy coming to New York City for the Super Bowl experience a lot more than, no offense, they did a great job hosting the game, but Indianapolis, Detroit, or Minnesota. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I think I think if you look at it from an entertainment standpoint, from an indoor perspective, if it is a little bit on the cold side, I think New York has so much indoor activity to offer that they can do. I think what I was kind of alluding to was the sitting outside.
Oh, during the game. That's
going to
be brutal.
Yeah, the kind of hanging around before the game and that stuff there. But I think from a venue standpoint, I mean, New York can offer up, you know, just about anything from entertainment to sports to music to whatever. But it's going to be interesting. I'm happy they have it. It's great revenue for the city. It's great after some of the things that have happened in the area over the last year or so. So I'm hoping for the best, and I'm hoping for the Giants to be in it. And they've done some weird things in the past in 42 and 46 with the Patriots. So I'm hoping there's some karma this year with the Super Bowl.
All right, Vic. Appreciate the call, buddy. Thank you.
And New York City does have a lot to offer. I think Vic hit it right on the nose. And probably, I would assume, the Javits Center in the city is going to be like the convention center where they would house the media, no?
Where's it going to be?
They haven't
selected
the location.
They don't know where the media site's going to be yet?
That would be the most logical place, though.
Really? Just the two hotels? Well, I could see them using, though, you know, they have that huge NFL experience. I could see them maybe putting that at the Javits Center. Or even at the Garden, if you want to do it that way, based on whether or not the Knicks and the Rangers are home that week. I mean, there are just so many different places that you could put this stuff. And part of the bid was that you have the stadium in New Jersey, but you also have the amenities of New York City, where that enhances your bid and your ability to do other stuff, you know, within the city. You know what they could maybe do? Bring back the Play Lombardi maybe for that Super Bowl week. People can go see that. That'd be a nice little nugget you could bring in there. How about that?
That's true.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, they could put it back on Broadway.
Yeah.
So that people who are in town can view that, tie it into the NFL experience. Look at you, man, already planning ahead.
And Lance's apartment, of course, is open for anybody coming in for the Super Bowl to come hang out or crash. He'll be charging a measly $250 a night just for a sleeping bag on his cold stone floor.
Yes, and you may want to make reservations right now because clearly I'm already getting phone calls.
Wow.
Overwhelming.
You have so many ladies over all the time anyway. There already isn't a whole lot of room.
That's true.
Yes.
So it's going to be tough. You can imagine if it's so busy now, what it's going to be like a year from now when the Super Bowl's in town.
201-939-4513 all the way out to Taiwan. We're going to say hello to Brooke. Brooke, good morning from here in New York. I guess good evening out in Taiwan.
You got it, John. You're right. It's the evening time. Thanks for taking my call, fellas.
Hey, you're welcome.
I listen to you guys online all the time.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
And, Hey, guys, I want to talk a little bit about the defense.
Sure.
Here's what I noticed this year, and I want to contrast it in a couple games. Number one, the Steelers game. Big boy football really had its way with us this year. What I mean by big boy football is big bodies in the trenches, moving the pile, and pounding that rock right up in our face.
I'll buy that.
Now, we play against Green Bay, a finesse team, an athletic team. They do things in space. We match up really well with teams like that. Now, someone can say, but the San Fran, they fly around the middle. They blow things up. But if Alex Smith don't throw those picks and get behind, that could be a different game for us.
That's true.
So when I'm looking at the Giants and their offseason plans, I really look to the trenches on the defensive line and the middle linebacker position for two reasons. Number one, big boy football beats us. Alfred Morris destroyed us this year. As much as RG3 had his way, if that dive play isn't working in the read option and he's getting 6, 7, 8, 12 yards per carry, RG3 doesn't have that option to go around the outside. And I think that we need to look at maybe acquiring some big tackles like we tried with Sean Rogers last year that can eat up space, occupy blockers, and really finally once get an athletic middle linebacker to come in and blow guys up. Because I like Herzlick. I love his heart. I love Chase's heart. I like those guys, but they don't make dynamic plays. Chase made some very key plays, but he's not a dynamic player. We need some big bodies and some dynamic players in those trenches. What do you guys think about that?
Brooke, I think you're right on the money. I could not have put it better myself. And even you mentioned the 49er game. I'm going to throw out that Saints game as well. The Saints had 100 yards rushing in that first half against the Giants with Pierre Thomas, Ingram, and those guys. And if it wasn't for David Wilson and his ridiculous kickoff returns, the Saints would have ran for probably 200 yards on the Giants in that game as well. You look at the Ravens, they put up 200 yards on the Giants. The Falcons could have run the ball all year. They ran the ball well on the Giants. LeSean McCoy did. Alfred Morris did twice. DeMarco Murray ran the ball well on the Giants. Even Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, Trent Richardson, LeSean McCoy. You can go down the list. The rush defense this year stinks, and I agree with you. I think defensively, your focus this year has to be improving against the run because everything that went wrong for the Giants started with the fact they couldn't get teams in third and long to take advantage of their pass rush. And when you can't stop the run, nothing else you're trying to do on defense works.
That's right. And it's funny, like, you know, I follow you guys. I follow Paul, Anita. I watch everybody, and I know you guys are getting the talk from the organization saying, well, we were inconsistent, and we couldn't figure it out. Well, I've been watching the Giants since 82, and we've had great linebackers in the past. We stopped the run last year in the playoffs. We just got destroyed against the run this year, and it really hurt players like JPP and Tuck and OC because their sack numbers dropped, and everybody points the finger at them saying, well, we got to rush the passer. Well, you can't rush the passer if you can't stop that rock going right up the middle.
Yep.
Not to the outside, right up the gut, right in your face, and that demoralizes the defense.
No, Brooke, you're right. Look,
and it wears him down, too. So that by the time the fourth quarter comes around, they can't make a stop.
This year, there's some fantastic defensive linemen in this draft. And I hope in our first round, we spend a pick on a D-tackle, a big space eater that can really hunker down. Because I like Linville. I think Linville's a good player. I thought he came out the gate charging really nice. First half of the season was good. He tapered off a little bit at the end, but he's still a factor. I thought Chris being hurt this year, he was not himself the whole season. But after those two guys, we've got no depth. And you can't rely on Rocky Bernard for another season.
Well, I don't think Rocky Bernard will be back. But remember, Sean Rogers is actually signed for one more year. So we'll see if he decides to try to come back from that blood clot. And then you have the young guy, Marcus Kuhn, who I think the Giants actually did really like this year when he finally got used to the NFL. Then he tore his ACL. So who knows how good he's going to be next year with the knee. And then, quite frankly, Marvin Austin, as Paul Dottino said yesterday, he's got to show you something at this point. He is a show-me player. He's got to prove that he deserves to get on the field in the offseason this year. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're right. Mm-hmm. You got to move on.
There's three kids out there. There's the kid from Missouri. There's the kid from Ohio State. And there's those two defensive ends from Louisiana State University. And I hope we scoop one of those guys in the first round, or we can get that Ogletree kid from Georgia.
Yeah, good outside linebacker. Yeah, good linebacker.
If he could fall to us, we get a dynamic player in the mold of a Bowman and in the mold of a Willis that can go side to side. And also, too, we get a backer like that. And the other thing about our defense this year is we got picked apart in the short passing game because our linebackers in the middle don't move side to side very well. They just don't.
Yeah, the
they
slant route killed the Giants this season.
Oh, it just murdered us.
Yeah.
So, I hear the organization all year talk about, wow, we're inconsistent and stuff like that. No, we matched up and beat the teams that we matched up with. And, yes, they were good teams. Green Bay's a good team. But, like last year in the playoffs, I knew we were beating them because we owned that matchup, you know. And New Orleans this year, everybody scored points against New Orleans.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, but, Brooke, I hear you. I think the point the organization makes, though, is that inconsistent – in terms of playing well. Now, look, you're right. They were consistently bad against the run. That's true. But even even given your criteria, they should have played well against the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons are not a smash-mouth, you know, big boy, beat-you-up football team. And the Giants still didn't even come out and play well against them. The Cincinnati Bengals aren't this team that's going to beat you up and throw you around. The Giants didn't show up, and I'll use that expression, against the Bengals. So I think even against the teams they might have matched up well against, some games they were still inconsistent just with the quality of play. And I think, frankly, at times the effort the guys took onto the field when they played on a given Sunday. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I definitely agree with you, John. Like that's a little bit of Super Bowl hangover. That's a little bit, we can pull it together kind of feeling like we've been here before. I agree with that, but there were some glaring weaknesses on that side of the ball this year. I thought the offense, of course, Akeem was hurt, and it hurt us. And I thought that we had a great situation with Andre Brown, and it was really sad to see him go down. I felt really bad for him. We had three running backs there that I knew down the stretch were going to be there. The offense looked good, even the offensive line, where I know some guys pick about our offensive line, but they seem to always kind of pull together towards the end of the year. We got a great offensive line coach, got a great tight end coach that teaches those guys how to block. I hope we spend some money this year in the offseason draft and on the defensive side of the ball so we take care of the running game. That's all I got to say, fellas. Thanks for taking my call, man. Appreciate it.
All right, Brooke,
hey, Brooke, thanks
so
much for calling in. Brooke, the caller of the week, by the way. That was an excellent call out of Brooke, all the way from Taiwan.
You can send a lot to the table.
You can send Lance the bill.
And the Niners point that he brought up, you know, I was looking back at that box score because he said, listen, they beat them 26-3, but that game could have ended up a lot differently had the turnovers not been there. And I'm looking at the box score. The Giants, don't forget, were 2 of 6 in the red zone in that contest. They did not execute very well when they got within the 20s. What happened is all those interceptions put the Giants in tremendous field position, and they wound up settling for one field goal after another. So, you know, the Niners get an additional touchdown or two. That's a whole different ballgame. The offense did not do a lot in that contest. It was all on the shoulders of the defense, with Antoine Roll getting 2 of the 3 picks.
Hey, look, Giants just had 340 yards of total offense. They actually ended up running the ball fairly well, 37 times for 149 yards. But Eli Manning just 15 of 28 for 193 yards and a touchdown. You know, you aren't looking at spectacular statistics here on the offensive side of the ball by any means.
Well, on 6 trips in the red zone, you would expect to get in the end zone more than twice, John.
Hey, look, 3 interceptions for Aaron Rodgers. When the other team's quarterback throws 3 picks and your quarterback throws 0, you better win the game. You better win it.
Well, as Tom Coughlin says, the turnover battle usually dictates who wins and who loses ball games. And another thing that I wanted to piggyback off of what you had mentioned about Marvin Austin, and Brooke was talking about that he'd like to see the Giants get another defensive tackle to add some depth. One other guy that is a show-me player this offseason is probably James Brewer.
Yeah,
that would fall under that category. There are a couple of guys on this roster that you say, you know what, they've been here for a couple of seasons, the training wheels are coming off during OTAs and minicamp this year, and it's time to go out there, muscle people around, and prove that you belong on this roster, because there's opportunities to claim a roster spot, or I'll even take it a step further, there's opportunities to claim a starting job.
Yeah. I agree.
Brewer and Austin, to me, fall into that category. And if you have other recommendations, feel free to call in this morning, 201-939-4513. You can chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat.
Hey, look, and Brooke hit it right on the head. Whether it's a defensive lineman or a linebacker, one place the Giants have to improve this offseason is being strong, tough, and good against the run. You have to. If that doesn't get better, this team's going to struggle again next year. Bottom line.
If you can't stop the run, how are you supposed to have a good pass rush?
No, you can't, because you're not in third and long. It's hard to rush the passer on 3rd and 3.
And that's a big reason why they didn't have much of a pass rush this season.
It certainly was a factor. Look, were there opportunities on 3rd and longs where the Giants still didn't get pressure on the quarterback? No doubt about it. But the fewer opportunities you have, the fewer sacks you're going to have, the fewer pressures. The opposing quarterback gets comfortable, gets into a good zone, gets hot. It's very hard to take him out of it. So everything to me goes back to being unable to stop the run. And if you talk to Coach Coughlin every single week, or one of the coaches or players, they always say every week, job number one is stopping the run. And I'd say in 12 of the 16 games this year, the Giants did not do that. That's simple.
On your hand, one hand, you could count how many running backs had mediocre games against the Giants. And I don't even know if you need 5 fingers, to be honest with you.
I don't think you do either. Let's think. I want to bring up the schedule.
Well,
here.
I know Doug Martin had 66 yards, but the Bucs moved the ball through the air tremendously
Doug Martin
against
really
the Giants.
Only have 66
Doug Martin
yards?
Only had 66 in week two.
Well, I felt like he had more than that, to be honest with you. The Panthers running backs didn't have a big game against the Giants.
The Panthers on the ground had 60 yards rushing total. Right.
LeSean McCoy had a nice little game in week number four, if
correct.
I recall.
Trent Richardson was effective.
Had a nice little game. How were the Niners running back?
Niners, I think, only had 80 yards on the ground. I'm going to bring it up just to confirm. I looked at it earlier.
I have it right here. Hold on.
Niners had 80. They did have 80.
Well, they only ran the ball 17 times. So
they
had a 4.7-yard average. And they actually abandoned the run sooner than they had to in that game. Alfred Morris had a lot of success in week seven. Had the Cowboys run the ball in week eight. I know DeMarco
Murray
didn't play.
Remember, they were
play.
Down. I'm assuming they didn't run the ball that many times.
Yeah, only 17 rushes for 19 yards.
Yeah, they were down 23-0 in that contest.
So you're up to four games if you count the 49ers. The Steelers ran the ball well against the Giants.
Isaac Redman, big game.
Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis had a nice little game against the Giants as well. The Packers didn't run it too well, so you're up to 5.
And they don't have a true running game to
right.
rely on.
The Redskins ran it on the Giants. The Saints ran it on the Giants. The
Falcons
ran it on the Giants. The Ravens ran it
correct.
On the Giants. And then the Eagles really didn't. So I guess you're up to 6. Six out of 10
one
games.
One hand and a finger.
And that's if you count the 49ers, who had to abandon the run but still had some success when they did run it.
Yeah, you may want to eliminate that out of the equation because if that game's closer, who knows how effective San Francisco would have been on the ground.
So, you could say the same for Carolina, too. It went down big in that game early. So you look at it, but we'll count them in there just for the heck of it. So you look at it, 6 out of the 16 games where they did a decent job stopping
the run.
It's
not a good percentage. You need to do better than that in order to have success.
And over the course of the year, where are they ranked in terms of rush defense? I'll look that up real quick here, but I know they were about 28th overall in terms of overall defense. And if you look at just their running defense in totality, the Giants simply did not stop the run all year long. So if you look at a composite of their entire season put together.
24th.
And that's in terms of yards per game, correct?
They gave up 129 yards a game on the ground.
And that's at a 4.6-yard average, which I will do that sort for you here. That was 5th worst in the league. A 4.6-yard rushing average against. Not good.
There are teams that have had mediocre defenses and wound up winning Super Bowls. You look at the Packers and the Saints. Opportunistic defenses, not defenses that'll shut you down. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a top 10 defense to get to the big dance. But you need to have some consistency, something that you can rely on, some identity. And I throw this out there to Giants fans. I've done it all season long. If you were to look at this Giants defense as a whole over the course of the year, what was its identity?
How about the team as a whole?
Yeah. But specifically the defense, I'd like to know. I mean, when you throw out the Giants defense, would you say, could they stop the run? We've just gone over that. They could not. Are they effective against the pass? So-so. Did they have a good pass rush? Was non-present at times. Were they good at hitting the quarterback at least? No. Were they good at deflecting passes? I mean, show me a strength here for this Giants defense. It's really hard to do that. You got to dig extremely deep.
I think they only allowed tight ends to score 3 touchdowns against them.
All right, you got to hang your hat on something.
That's the Anita Mark stat that she likes to throw out there. Fantasy implications.
But that's also not necessarily indicative of this defense because maybe teams didn't go to the tight end so much against the Giants.
They didn't have to.
Exactly. They ran the ball effectively. So you can only put so much stock in numbers like that.
We lost our call from North Dakota. That would have been our first ever call from North Dakota. But we did get a call from Taiwan today, which is very
impressive. We're branching out.
Far East.
Correct. I wonder actually if Brooke is serving in the military. We should have asked him that. Normally a lot of our listeners overseas.
You know what? I don't think we have a base on Taiwan. I don't know either.
Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there. I just know a lot of our international
right.
listeners are in the military.
I know we've got a lot of calls from South Korea from people that have been in the military from the U.S. We've gotten calls from there. We've gotten some calls from Hong Kong, which obviously no U.S. military presence there, but a lot of businesses in the U.S. work in Taiwan and Hong Kong. So that's my guess where those calls are coming from. But, yeah, I mean, we've
and
we've
it's
been
one
all over
thing
the world.
To get an international call during the season. To get it in the off season, that just goes to show you why you named Brooke the caller of the week here.
Well, we've hit Europe. We've hit Asia. We've hit I've gotten South America calls before. I have not gotten a call from Africa yet. That's what I'm looking for. I've gotten Middle East. I have not got – I think we got – did I get a Saudi Arabia call or Kuwait call?
I feel we've gotten something from Europe, too.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely gotten calls from Europe, no question. like Germany, with all of our military personnel there.
Correct.
So, but yeah, we have not gotten Africa yet. We have not gotten Antarctica, another continent we have not yet touched. I think we got an Australia call once too, if memory serves me right.
Getting back to the defensive theme here on Twitter, good friend Mike Farmer. The defensive theme this year was wait and see what happens and do your best to chase him down. Dictate nothing. You got to throw a little humor into the play here.
It's not bad. Not a good strategy, just for the record. But
no, it's not going to win you many football games. And unfortunately, the Giants were put in that position.
And
they had their backs against the wall.
And I've been watching TV the last couple of days. You've been inundated with all the Super Bowl coverage. The media day is today, so you'll get that last
all the
bit
wacky
of
stuff.
Nonsense out of the way. Jim Harbaugh, I've not seen a ton of it, but I've seen bits and pieces. He's done a pretty good job having some fun with the media the first couple of days, though.
He has opened up, which is nice to see, because John has a little bit more of a personality, referring to the Ravens head coach. But Jim is starting to play back and forth with the media. He was very interactive during yesterday's press conference. The Niners arrived on Sunday. The Ravens came into town yesterday. So each team is on a little bit of a different schedule. But Jim is showing a different side of himself, which is something that we have not seen during the course of the season. You know what? Just like the players, coaches don't necessarily get to go to the Super Bowl very often. You know, so you have to take advantage of these opportunities. You got to enjoy it. You know, yes, it's all about the X's and O's. You want to walk out victorious. There's this family rivalry. There's a lot on the line for this family. But at the end of the day, there's no guarantee that Jim Harbaugh and company are going to get back there, whether it be next year or 10 years from now. So embrace the opportunity, take it in, and see where it takes you.
Has Eric Harbaugh had his first press conference yet?
No, he has not. Not that I'm aware of. The family has had a conference call.
I know.
They have not had a press conference. I'm sure that's coming. The parents.
Yeah, I think they would have had it already. If they were going to do a press conference, they wouldn't have done a conference call.
We still got plenty of days before the game. I mean, the media's got to write 20 more stories.
Yes, but usually the coaches like to get that stuff out of the way early. So by Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, when you start having practice, you could focus on the actual game and push all that media stuff to the wayside.
Well, the coaches don't even need to take part in that press conference. I'm just talking about the Harbaugh parents.
Hold the
press conference, answer questions, and that's it. The brothers can do whatever they want. They can continue to coach their players. Remember, John Harbaugh called up during that conference call where the parents were on and tried to catch his parents off guard, but they detected his voice. They don't need to be in the mix. Plus, it's an intriguing storyline, that alone. I mean, when was the last time a set of parents had two sons coaching teams in the Super Bowl? I mean, that's a little nerve-wracking if you're a parent.
Now, I'm going to suggest new overtime rules for the Super Bowl game. If it goes into overtime, rather than the normal NFL overtime rules, have some type of, like, sudden death one-on-one death match between Jim and John Harbaugh. How about that?
That would be intriguing. Somewhat, I guess. I don't know if Roger Goodell would sign off on that.
I don't think he would either.
I was thinking maybe, you know what, if they can't end the game, they should just pop in Madden on a video game system and maybe decide it that way, too. That could be another alternative route.
Or maybe
if a football game goes too long. I'm sure people would love the Super Bowl being determined based on technology.
Interesting. All right, I can see that.
Listen, there's so many wacky things that go down during Super Bowl week that I'm sure there are people that have thought about crazier things than we're discussing right now.
Well, on media day, you always have the woman with the wedding dress going around proposing to everybody. Usually
doesn't that get old, though?
Apparently not. You have the crazy guy with the puppet that goes around and asks questions as a ventriloquist. And then you have all the reporters from the bajillion newspapers that are in New Orleans covering this game.
And then normally Leno and Letterman probably send the guy down and they do their little skit, which I think is good. You know, it opens up an opportunity for the players to show a different side
of themselves. I'm not a big Leno guy myself.
Well, I'm not saying I'm necessarily a fan of those individual talk show hosts, but the skits themselves are somewhat entertaining.
I used to watch Letterman. He's not quite as funny anymore. I think Jimmy Kimmel's actually pretty funny. Kimmel's good.
I would not have assumed that you were a Jimmy Kimmel guy.
Jimmy Kimmel's pretty funny. I like him.
Jimmy Kimmel over the two.
Guillermo, the security guard? Come on.
I don't watch him
enough,
to be honest with you.
No, Cousin Sal, excuse me. It's good.
Jimmy Kimmel, I'm surprised. I thought you'd go old school.
Nah.
I thought you'd be more appreciative.
I like Letterman.
The guys
I feel
who
like,
have been there and done
I,
that.
I feel like Letterman's gotten a little nasty and not quite as funny in his latter years. There were some incidents that I wasn't a fan of. But.
Well, there was the whole thing with the switchover, as I like to call it.
Well, that was Leno, not Letterman. That
oh,
was Leno.
I thought you were talking about Leno.
And Conan lost it when he went to TBS and he couldn't bring any of his skits over. That was the end of Conan, in my opinion.
I was a fan of Conan. I thought it was going to be a good fit.
Yeah, it has not worked that well.
So we won't be seeing him in New Orleans then.
I'm sure he'll send somebody down there. He'll probably send down Joel, the announcer, used to send down to the Super Bowl sometimes.
Well, didn't
he just creep everybody out?
He had an actor as his sidekick, right?
Yeah.
Or a comedian?
Well, Andy Richter.
Andy Richter, that was it, yeah. I'm still working on the Hornets head coach, by the way.
You haven't thought of it yet?
I'm not, no.
I still have the page up. 201-939-4513. Stephanie's on the island. Stephanie, good morning.
Good morning.
What you got, Stephanie?
I was just saying, like, for the MetLife Super Bowl next season,
yep.
I really feel like the Giants, like, Eli Manning has the means with his team to make it. Because I was at the Super – I was at – not the Super Bowl, the Eagles game this last season, their last game, and I was watching them kick ass. And I'm like, he had the whole means to make it this year to the playoffs, to the NFC champions, and – to make it to the Super Bowl, and I don't know what he was going through. But I know next season, like, I would love to just see our Giants make it and play the Super Bowl in their home stadium.
Well, they'd be the first team to do that, Stephanie. No team has ever done that.
I know. I think that would be absolutely insane to watch them do that.
And
it
would
be the first team to make that kind of history.
And from the Giants' perspective, you know, a great comfort zone for them because they can sleep in their own beds. They can work out in their own facility. They know the stadium well. They know the conditions well. I mean, that's a huge advantage for the Giants if they have the opportunity to get there.
You know, Stephanie, it isn't my intention to freak you out here, but there is a bad history, and I'm going to put a big wet blanket on this whole idea now, but there's a bad history with the teams that are hosting the Super Bowl. They've had some very bad luck heading into some of these games. When the game was in Indianapolis, Peyton Manning hurts his neck out for the year after going his entire career without missing a game. The Saints have all their suspensions with Bounty Gate. The year the game is in New Orleans. When the game was in Dallas, Tony Romo breaks his collarbone. There isn't exactly a great history of teams that are hosting the Super Bowl even making the playoffs, let alone getting all the way to the big game.
I know, like, there were so many teams that I was shocked that didn't make the playoffs. I was, you know, like, Roethlisberger, a couple others. I was like, really? Like,
yeah.
All the big teams that normally you see in the playoffs weren't there.
Now, I got to tell you, for me, the NFL playoffs aren't the same if I don't see Mark Sanchez. So I was I was very, very upset by that.
I'm a diehard Giants fan, but I was actually upset that Sanchez didn't really do all that great this season.
Well, I'll tell you what. Next year, Stephanie, is a big year for Mark Sanchez. It's a do-or-die situation. They'll keep him around because they have to.
Even if we were to see Mark Sanchez in the Super Bowl, you know, it's still Giants-Jets Stadium. You know, that's still a New York team making it to the New York Stadium.
That's true. Well, how about the Buffalo Bills?
Even Buffalo. Technically, what I've been tormented for my whole life, the real New York team, quote unquote. But yeah, I would love, you know, to see at least a New York team make it to the New York Stadium and play. You know, hopefully that bad luck streak stops. Of the teams being hurt, but...
All right, Stephanie, thanks so much for weighing in this morning here on Big Blue Kickoff, 201-939-4513. You could also chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag GiantsChat.
I think we need to come up with a slogan this year. Something like, you know, like they had reversed a curse when the Red Sox finally won the World Series. I think you need to figure out some type of slogan next year to try to get the Giants and Jets, theoretically, into the Super Bowl.
Well, that does hold true recently, I think, that trend. But I was looking back, Ford Field hosted in 2006. I mean, the Lions were 5-11 in 2005.
Yeah, they were terrible.
But they were 5-11 for every season prior to that. So it's not a huge development.
The point being here is find the team that hosted the game that made a legitimate run and almost got to the Super Bowl.
I need some time to do that. We can maybe bring those results to the forefront tomorrow.
All right, you can do that. Maybe you weren't so obsessed with Charlotte Hornets head coach in 1993, you would have been done with this already.
Well, we got off topic today, but we spiced it up a bit. You know, Charles started us off, got in our new North Carolina theme, and we wrote it. You know, we were trying to campaign for the Panthers stadium to host the Super Bowl maybe down the road.
Well, I think they could. I mean, look, if it works in New York, I think a city like Charlotte becomes a legitimate option. especially since they're getting the renovations done to their stadium.
Well, MetLife Stadium could set the tone, as you mentioned, for other places.
I'm not saying Charlotte's going to be like the go-to location by any means, but I think it's a city that could be in the mix.
Well, then we threw out Soldier Field. Would they consider taking it there?
Chicago's,
there were renovations
Chicago's
to that stadium.
A little rough, man. Dude, Chicago winters.
How about Lambeau Field for a Super Bowl?
You might as well play in Lambeau or Alaska for all, you know, if you're going to do that, or play in Foxborough. A little too cold.
What about having a Super Bowl out in Seattle? Would they consider that? Quest Field, right?
That's a good question. It's not dome, but the fans actually are undercover in Seattle, so they could actually watch the game.
It's probably going to be a rainy Super Bowl, more than likely.
Yeah, it could be. Honestly, I could see Seattle being in the mix.
I don't think that's a stretch.
They have grass in Seattle, or is it field turf? It's turf, right? Yeah, I could see that. And that was a point. I forget which caller made that, but that was an excellent point. You can have these games in some of these colder climate places now because of the field turf. And you can have good footing despite the fact it's in the middle of winter. That's why a place like Pittsburgh, a place like Washington, they'll never get it because those fields are disasters. You can't play on those fields.
Well, most of the new stadiums also have good systems in place in terms of drainage that they can handle water, for example, and other elements.
True.
Just like new baseball stadiums
Steelers
as well.
Steelers stadium is pretty darn new. Handle it too well.
It all depends on how the facility is run. I'm not going to throw the Steelers equipment guys and field turf guys under the bus
field turf fault, guys. It's not their
fault. But that plays a role in terms of how they maintain it.
You have the college team and a pro team both playing on the same field. It's really cold. You don't get a lot of sun. Grass doesn't grow.
Well, that's why you got to put your work in during the offseason, just like the players.
Wow, you have high standards.
I do have high standards.
It's Mother Nature.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. We look back at the Redskins field, and there were numerous games where the field impacted the outcome. Watching that last game of the season with the Cowboys,
right.
It was a mess. Same thing with the Seahawks.
Right.
And it may have been a contributing factor as to why RG3 had to have reconstructive knee surgery.
You don't think the grounds crew is trying to get that thing ready as best they can?
Well, I haven't, you know, had a conference call with them yet to determine what their schedule is the last couple of weeks. But maybe we should schedule that in the upcoming days.
Dave in Rochester. Dave, good morning.
Well,
Dave,
that's what Dave thinks about the Redskins field.
We lost Dave. That's right. Dave, call back. We'll get you right back up. That's all right. Don't worry about it. Dave, give us a call back. We'll get you right back up before we
Dave's still recovering from Paul DeTino being on yesterday's show,
Very excited.
Oh, he's very excited.
I have to give you the name at this point. The show's almost over.
All right, let's hear it.
Give me a guess.
Well, I thought maybe you'd give me a clue of some sort, but you don't even know the guy, so you can't even provide a clue.
Okay, let me see if I can give you some other couple hints here.
Because I am drawing blanks,
I'll
be honest
with you. Let me click on his name.
He was only there for two seasons, you mentioned, right? Short stay.
Let's see. He was a player. Hold on. All right. So his only coaching experience was at the Hornets from 91 to 96. So he did coach them for 5 years, okay?
Okay.
He played as a player for the Philadelphia 76ers. He was drafted with the 21st pick in the 1973 NBA draft. He played for Philadelphia, Sacramento, Utah, and Dallas for 9 years. He had a 9-year career. Only averaged double-digit points twice. 6'7", 210 pounds. After coaching...
Did he go anywhere else?
Charlotte Hornets. Let's see. He was general manager for the Denver Nuggets, 1997, and then again in 2004 to 2005. Oh no, check that. Denver Nuggets, from 97 to 98, and then the Hornets. New Orleans Hornets from 2004 to 2005 as a GM or front office executive.
Wow, I'm still drawing some blanks here. Let's hear it.
Native of Richmond, Virginia, Alan Bristow.
Alan Bristow, okay. Wow. I don't have much of a reaction to
it. It was a tough one,
that was a tough one, that was.
I wasn't lying, it was a tough one. Anyway, Dave in Rochester is
back.
Dave, what's up, buddy?
What's up, guys?
What's up?
Hey, what's up, buddies? A couple quick things I wanted to run past you. I wanted to see what you thought about where Brandon Jacobs might land. What's his best opportunity? I got a little trivia for you. I wanted to see if you knew who Ray Lewis's first sack was.
Yes, I can tell you right now. It was against Jim Harbaugh.
It was. Jim Harbaugh. Unbelievable that it's going to be his last game against Jim Harbaugh. And then, Lance, I want to run past you maybe for for the draft this year for $250 a night. I could get me and a couple buddies, and we can crash at a house. we can go pick up some chicks. You know?
Hey, I may take you up on the offer. Well, you know, we'll go around town.
Yeah,
it's a possibility. Absolutely.
Now, Dave, I'm going to warn you, Lance is not a good wingman. He's out for himself. So if you think you're getting help from him when you're going out, you're wrong. He's all about him.
That's right.
Well, maybe we can work some out and get him out.
We may have to talk over strategy before we, you know, go around town.
Yeah, we can use like a football analogy to kind of get us around.
We'll scheme things out. We'll set up, you know, all the details.
So, Brandon Jacobs, I mean, is he going to land a gig? Do you think he's done? Is he going to get me? You'll probably get like a one-year deal. And then I was just wanted to get your opinion.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of demand. I mean, it's tough for a guy that had an injury-plagued season 2 years ago. There wasn't a lot of interest this past offseason, which is why he wound up with the 49ers for very limited money. And then he misses an entire year because of injury. Coach's decision, DNPs, and then finally getting cut for being a nuisance off the field. I think the question remains is that considering those off-the-field issues he had at the end of the year with the tweeting and whatever else you want to throw into that little pot, is it worth another team to take a risk to bring in this guy that if he doesn't play has proven that he can be a bit of a problem?
Well, they were saying that even Jim Harbaugh was just like, and he had these issues in the past with the Giants that Jim Harbaugh was just kind of like tired of it. He just was like, you know, whatever, and he dealt with it.
Yeah, it's like, Brandon, you're not playing. You're not really contributing much to the team, so I'm not going to want to deal with your big mouth. So see you later.
Dave, I think a lot of it will be determined based on what role Brandon Jacobs wants with whatever team that he may be seeking. The problem with the Niners was his attitude off the field, but also he wasn't happy about his role. You know, they had three other running backs on that team. He was number four on the depth chart.
Five,
whatever you want. I mean, six even if you want to throw
it out.
Well,
he was behind Gore, Dixon,
LaMichael James,
Kendall Hunter, and LaMichael James.
So there you go, fifth on the depth chart. You know, he knew what he was getting into. I find it hard to believe that the Niners said, Brandon, you're going to come in and you're going to be our backup running back. I mean, they must have painted a detailed picture for him to say, listen, you're going to come in and you're going to have a very small role, maybe a goal line back, or maybe we'll use you in practice to really help with the game plan. So if there's another team that presents that to him, is he going to accept that? And then what's going to happen 10 weeks into the season when he realizes he's not playing? That's the big thing that Brandon Jacobs is going to have to answer for himself. You know, also, that's what ended badly here. You know, he wasn't too happy with his role. Also, there were financial issues. But Jacobs needs to look himself in the mirror and realize he's beyond the days where he's going to be a starting tailback getting 15 to 20 carries. He's more like a complimentary back that, if he's lucky, gets maybe 5 to 7 carries a game. If he can accept that and a team is willing to offer him an opportunity, great. If not, I don't know if there's a spot for him in the NFL right now.
Yeah, you know, I just find it funny sometimes when players leave certain gigs, and I know he left for, I think it was like $500,000, which, you know, obviously is a lot of money.
I think it was actually less than that, believe it or not, Dave.
Really?
Yeah.
And then you leave these gigs where you're comfortable and you're in, and then you go to another spot, and then it just kind of doesn't work. I don't know. I just find it funny sometimes.
No, Dave, you're right, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Brandon Jacobs found a niche here with the Giants. It worked. He got along with Coach Coughlin. Coughlin appreciated his effort. He has a little thing with Bradshaw, and he played. And Lance hit the nail right on the head and said it as perfectly as you can say it. Unless he's willing to accept the fact that he's no longer going to be a primary or even, quite frankly, the secondary back getting 10 to 12 carries a game, he's probably not going to find a job in this league that's to his liking. And then he's going to be a problem off the field, and much like the 49ers did, he's going to get cut. That's it.
You were talking about the financial implications regarding Brandon Jacobs. It was a $500,000 roster bonus.
Yeah, but I think the Giants are willing to negotiate that down to a smaller number, but not quite as small as Jacobs wanted. I think it only came out, if reports were correct. I'm just going off of reports here. I don't know anything. Just based on reports, I think it came out to something like $200,000 or something like that.
And then I think he wound up getting just over $1 million from the Niners on that one-year deal.
And at that point, it's about pride, and it's not about the money, in my opinion. The reason Brandon Jacobs left is he didn't want to take the pride hit of taking that big of a pay cut, so he'd rather go somewhere else.
And unfortunately, it didn't work out.
Grass is not always greener.
Very true.
201-939-4513. Final call of the show. Let's go to Nathan up in Canada. Nathan, what's going on?
Hey, guys. I called in, I think, last week, and I couldn't stay away. So I was really gonna talk about how Seth MacFarlane from Family Guy likes the Giants, but I thought it was something different. I think it was from Monday. You guys said like how Tuck's been kind of off lately because he's not that young anymore.
Right.
And I think maybe we should try and get like maybe an MVP from college and put him, I guess, like first, like for maybe like 3 or 4 games, see how that does, and if he does better than Tuck currently, maybe just put Tuck on the bench for now.
Well, you know what? The thing about it, on the defensive line, you use so many different players. So depending on who starts, both guys are still going to get a significant amount of playing time. But look, the Giants definitely have defensive line as an option here, Nathan. If they want to improve their defense, if you made me guess right now who the Giants will end up with in this draft, my guess would be in the first round is a defensive lineman based solely on Jerry Reese's drafting history. He likes to draft pass rushers. That's simply what he does.
Exactly, and I think another person who I think there's one person who we cannot get rid of. And honestly, I'll be done with the GM if we do. If we lose either Snee or Nix, I think we're screwed.
Well, I don't think either guy's going anywhere, so I don't think you have anything to worry about. Nix has to get healthy this year, then is a free agent. The Giants will have to make a decision on him. Nathan, I want to ask you, though. I always thought Seth MacFarlane was a Patriot fan because he's from the New England area. I didn't realize he was a big Giant guy. Is that true?
Yeah. There was this scene on this episode where they make fun of New Yorkers, and this had, like, a whole bunch of other New York teams, like, suck, and then... And then the one team they didn't say was a Giants. I was like, damn right.
All right, Nathan. Appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much. International today. Another international call today. You know, it's continental U.S., but I'll cheat and I'll say it's international.
And you're right about the point that, you know, even though Justin Tuck has not performed up to the typical level that we're used to seeing him, you know, they have plenty of guys that they'll just mix and match and rotate. That's how Perry Field works. Just because you start doesn't mean you're going to play a high percentage of snaps.
Let's not put Justin Tuck out the pasture just yet, please. And a lot of people tried to do that at the end of the year, and Justin Tuck quickly dispelled that at the end of the season, saying, I have no intention of retiring ever. I mean, not ever, but now. Eventually he will retire, but not in the near future. He still thinks he has a lot to offer.
Lifetime contract he has with the Giants.
He still thinks he has a lot to offer and will be around for quite some time.
And, you know, we don't like to point to injuries all the time as excuses, but let's face it, Justin Tuck is still dealing with that neck injury, you know, not 100% healthy. So perhaps another offseason will give him an opportunity to also get back to full health. You know, that's the key for this offseason. Can guys who, you know, they need for 16 games – you know, be ready to play 16 games. It's not just the Hakeem Nixes of the world. It's also the Tucks of the world, the JPPs of the world who had some back spasms to deal with. You know, these guys need to be able to get out there each and every game. That's the only way the Giants are going to play consistent football. You need your main nucleus. You can't have, well, we're going to have our backup corner this game, then we're going to get him back the next game, our starting corner, and then we're going to play mix and match in a game of musical chairs. Teams, it's hard to sustain consistency under those conditions.
All right, folks, busy week this week. Howard Cross will join us on Friday. Michael Eisen will join us from New Orleans over the next couple days as well. Trying to get Sean O'Hara as well to come on over the next couple days as well. Talk some Super Bowl and talk some New York Giants football as well. Lance, appreciate it as always. Thanks a lot, my friend.
See you manana.
That's all the time we have in Big Blue Kickoff Live every weekday morning from 9:30 to 10:30 on Giants.com. We'll see you next time.